Charlie Anderson is originally from Newberry Park, which I grew up next door to him in Thousand Oaks, and we always called it Pewberry Nark. That was our... and he currently... Yeah. But I now respect Newberry Park so much. He currently lives in Pismo Beach, and he is an IT person. All right, Charlie Anderson.
Thank you. So, in a boy's life, in my experience, the most important person in his life is the women in his life, particularly his mother. You also have fathers and grandfathers, which I will be talking about tonight, because they are these people that are present in your life and they're really active in your life. But you, in my life, I ended up growing up and having a less connected relationship with any father or grandfather or male figure in my life. So, when I was very young, my grandmother on my father's side died, and I have a very, very faint recollection of crawling on the ground. They lived way up in Northern California, around her deathbed, but I never met her that I can recall. On my mother's side of the family, about the same time of age in my life, my grandfather and my grandmother divorced. And so, when I look at my extended family, my grandparents, I really see my grandfather in Northern California, my grandfather in Los Angeles, and then my grandmother somewhere in the country, right? She would travel all over the place. She was kind of like a very free spirit. So I'll talk to you about my grandfathers. My grandfather in Los Angeles, it was this really big guy. He was my mother's father, and we called him Bapa. And I don't know where that name came from, but we just called him Bapa. I did not know that grandfather was even like a thing, because it was just Bapa. And you're like, oh, it's Bapa. Apparently his name was David as well. So as a young guy, you know, he's this like single, I don't know, maybe mid-40s guy, and he lived in Los Angeles. He was a banker, and when they went off the gold standard, he decided that the American economy was incredibly worthless. So he skimped on taxes for like 20 years and then got caught, and so never had a dime to his name. He lived out of a trailer for the most part, but I have this memory of going to his house, and I'm probably 6 or 7 years old, this like little kid, my blanket, you know, and I go to Grandpa Bapa's house, and he's living down in like Sherman Oaks or Encino or something down in the valley of Los Angeles. And I just remember like going to his house and coming from Newbury Park. It's like this really nice, quaint area. And then going there, and he like, it was like this really nasty like lawn thing, and like there were bars on the windows, and there were just cars everywhere, you know. And I just was like, who is this guy? And my parents, I just remember they just like dropped me there. And I mean, he's a nice guy, but they dropped me at the door, and I just remember going inside, and it was like dark, like everything is dark. You know, like that 60s look, like the dark wood and the real heavy, like, you know, curtains and all, like a yellow and like the paisleys, and I just remember it was like so dark inside, and I go in, and he's like this big guy, and I'm like, hey, Bapa, and he's like, oh, what's going on? All right, we're gonna do things my way, and I mean, it was like no fun. It was like no fun to hang out at Bapa's house. I stayed the night, and in the morning, I was like, Bapa, I'm hungry for breakfast. And he's like, what? You want to eat breakfast? And I was like, yeah, I'm hungry. And he's like, let me look. And he like pulls open the fridge. I mean, I look in, and there's like nothing there. And so he takes a tomato, and he cuts it into pieces and puts it on my plate. And he's like, eat breakfast. And I was like, you know, this kid, I'm like, this is not breakfast. I want like cereal and stuff. And he's like, no, you're eating your tomato. So I try to eat this tomato. I'm like eating the tomato. And I'm like, man, this is really bitter, Bapa. Like, I can't eat this tomato. So he just goes in the cupboard and gets honey and pours it on the tomato. And he's like, that's what you get. I mean, like, As a kid, I never liked hanging out with Bappa for apparent reasons. So as I got older, Bappa, you know, because he was like living in trailers and all over the place because he couldn't ever stay down, because anytime he got money anywhere, the IRS would show up at his door and take it, right? Because he was like, you know, tax evader extraordinaire. So he used to go down to Mexico all the time. And growing up, my mother would go down deep into Mexico, down the Baja Peninsula to La Paz. And they would just stop along the way and all this kind of stuff. So when I got into middle school, Bappa said, I want to take you and your little sister to Mexico. Because it was like what happened when he was with my mother and she was our age. So we said, sure, let's go to Mexico with Bappa. And we went, my sister and I, for like, it was our summer, and we spent like, you know, 3 months in Mexico just driving. He wouldn't drive at night because he had killed a man one time driving at night. Like, so we just take this long time. It was like an 8-day drive. He would take it down to the bottom of you know, near Cabo in La Paz. And then we'd park on this desolate beach that he'd been going to since like the 60s. Nobody's around. And we'd just like sit there. And as a kid in my middle school, I mean, it was like, as my little sister's there, it's all right, I guess. But I remember the same feeling then, really, as I felt when I was a kid with Bappa. It was like he's this gruff old guy that has like no comprehension of children. I mean, he would like get angry. I remember this one time we were driving, and it was like he had a big like Dodge van from the 70s and this bed in the back and then a trailer he'd tow, and we'd drive down, and with a dog would sit on the bed in the back, and it like stunk. It was like this retriever, and I don't like dogs because they smell. There was like a smelly dog in the back, and we're just driving. It'd be like driving all day, and you're just like, no music. He might put on like the Scottish tape of like, you know, Scottish chanters of the Highlands, you know. And so we drive down. I just remember one time he just got so mad at me. He's yelling and screaming, and he like fully stops paying attention to the road. And in Mexico, the road that goes, there's one road that goes down. It's just a two-lane road for the most part that I can recall. And sometimes it was dirt. And it was just like this little thing through the desert. And he's just like, he's like yelling at me, you know, and he just like drives the truck and trailer off the road, and it's like hilly, and it's like, and we're just like going. I'm like, Bappa, you're gonna kill us, you know. And it was just always like that. It was like contention always, and I could never find, like why did I care about this guy? Like, yeah, he's my Bappa, he's my grandfather, but like, I did never feel any kind of connection to him. As I got older, he developed cancer in his stomach and prostate, and ended up coming and living with us on hospice, and he was about to die, and he had been traveling the U.S. with his dog in a trailer, so he came back from Florida. He flew back and just kind of went into hospice and lived at my parents' house with us when I was in high school. And I remember one time Bappa fell off the bed, you know, and he was like, because he's just completely feeble, but he was big. He's a big guy. He fell off the bed, and I just remember, like, you know, there's maybe those like kind of coming of age times in your life when you see like he was naked, right? He falls off the bed. He's totally feeble and butt naked, laying on the ground, helpless, and like we couldn't even pick him up. We called the firemen. They came over and they helped us get Bappa back in the bed, and it was like this guy who was always so gruff and like just disconnected became really weak. And it was just difficult for me. And so by the time he died, I remember the night he died, it was like 3 a.m. and Bappa died. And my mother comes up to me and wakes me up and is like, Charlie, Bappa's dead downstairs. You know, do you want to come see him and say goodbye? And I was like, no. And they took him away, and it was like that was the end of it for Bappa in my life. My other grandfather in Northern California, as a kid, I was like, oh, yeah, Grandpa Ed up in Northern California, he's like the coolest guy ever. Because like when you'd go there, it was like kind of a more traditional grandfather experience. He would like, you know, he had all this weird stuff in the attic, and he was old, and he had a cane from the war, but like He was more like, you know, you'd like go fishing and all this kind of typical grandfather things. Grandpa Ed, he's really into CB radios and computers. And so when I was a kid, he kind of helped me, I don't know, get into the computer world, which wasn't that big or important. It was only weirdos that did that kind of stuff, you know, when I was growing up. So Grandpa Ed, as he grew older, he ended up moving to Claremont and living in like an assisted living home when a fire burned everything in Northern California in his area. And it leveled his house. He had like a perfect El Camino in his garage. And the fire burned and turned the El Camino into nothing. We went there, you know, like to look for the parts. We sifted through all the things in this ashen wreck that was his house. I mean, like, we were like, where did the El Camino go? There's nothing here. Like, nothing. Burned his whole life down. So he moved, and he only escaped, you know, by the skin of his teeth. So he moved to Claremont, closer to us. And I would see him occasionally, but my idea of him being this like really cool grandfather faded when he was close. Because I would see him only probably once every 2 years or so. So when he lived in Claremont, I would see him more often. And this idea of like, oh, the cool grandpa faded. And he became kind of this grumpy, like angry person. And I remember I was in college and he like emailed me this document. He would type in all caps. And he emailed me this document. It was probably like 40 pages, all caps, and the title was The Day My Life Ended. And I was in college, and I was like kind of more excited about life and just figuring out what kind of person I was going to be. And I read this document, we're flying back to Chicago, where I went to school, and I'm just like flipping pages. And apparently the day his life ended was the day that his airplane crashed. All of his crew members fell out of this airplane and died. And he broke his legs, like shattered his legs entirely. He was like 20. And he like wrote, it was like all this big deal about this airplane crash. And then there was this little blurb on the end. And it was like, crashed the airplane, went to Hawaii. And then like, I came back home, went to California, married some random chick and had some kids. The end. And it was like, your life ended there? Like, I just, my perception of him changed, and I was like, I just feel like this guy is just bitter, and I'm like, I don't want to have anything to do with him either, really. And then he died. It wasn't too long ago, maybe 5 years ago, and I was living in Chicago, and so I came out, and we went up to, you know, off the 99 up there. And I love California, and so it was so wonderful for me to come back to California from Chicago, which I do not love that city or the land around it. So I came back, and I was here, and I was with my family, who I love. And we go up, and my dad comes to me and says, hey, Charlie, I'd like you to give kind of a eulogy at this funeral for your grandfather. So I said, sure. And I had theological education and stuff, so I said, sure. I'll do that. I have a relatively non-religious family. So I'm prepping it. I'm like, oh, what am I going to say? Like, and I'd really poured over, like, how would I communicate to these people who I love, my family, about this guy who, like, I didn't have, like, good feelings or connection to. So I tried to just be, like, super ecumenical and just write something that was just super nice, right? So we get up there, and we're in this graveyard that I remember going to as a kid that was just down the street from where his house burned down. And my grandmother, his wife that died when I was young, is buried there, and they had a plot next to each other. And I remember kind of walking the graveyard before the service and thinking about my grandmother, and my dad always speaks so highly of her, you know, just like this wonderful, perfect grandmother that I never had. And I'm thinking about my grandfather, about Grandpa Ed. I think about Bapa. And I just sometimes go like, man, I wish I had just a more like traditional like grandparent thing. I talk to people and they're like, yeah, or I had this friend and you go to his grandmother's house and like she would give you cookies. You go to my grandma's house and she would like bend spoons and spin crystal balls. And as a kid, I'm like, I don't know what all this means, you know? And so I get up to do this eulogy, and I start kind of through it, and we're all sitting in a semicircle, and I just started to cry. And in my family, you don't cry around each other. It's a pretty emotionally segregated family. And I just started to cry, and I was like, I'm going to just, you know, push through this, no big deal. I look at like somebody like, oh, my brother, and he's like, you know. But I just like continue to cry. And like, and I was like, why am I crying, you know? And I just like was like, I'm just going to push through it. And I just continue to talk. And eventually I couldn't, like, there was nothing coming out. It was just like sobs and tears. And everybody like looked awkward. And I was just like, I'm sorry, I can't finish. And I sat down. And later, months later, you know, I come back, I'm kind of rocked. I tell my wife, hey, I cried like uncontrollably. You know, and afterward, my family, they just didn't talk about it. They were just like, okay. And I tell my wife, and I'm like, it was so conflicting. Like, I was so happy to be there, but I have this thing with like the men in my family, and I just started to flesh it out in my own mind over the next few months in Chicago. And I thought, you know, I wasn't crying for my grandfather. I was crying for my father. I thought, but I love my father, but I'm disconnected from my father in the same way that I was disconnected from these other men in my life. And I'm just kind of rolling this over going, why was I crying when I hardly even knew this guy who died? And I realized it was because all the shortcomings in my father's life, where he wasn't there for me, or, you know, all these things that if young men and young women think about their parents when they get older, they're like, oh, they weren't this or they weren't that. Or I wish they, you know, my dad, like, I wish he would hug me to this day, you know, right? But he just can't seem to do it right. And I think I was crying for this loss in my life for these guys who I wish would just like care for me as men. And it was at that time I realized I've got a whole bunch of hatchets I'm carrying around. Like, it's not just, you know, I didn't like Bapa or Grandpa was, you know, mean, or my dad wasn't there. I just had all these hatchets. And I realized that those tears I had at this graveside were tears almost of like forgiveness, where I had to let go of these hatchets. And I think I learned a valuable lesson in it, that these men in my life were like people. They weren't gods. You know, my Bapa had a hard time in life. I can understand and value why Grandpa Ed, when his plane went down and all of his friends died and his legs shattered, why that would radically rock his life and why that would change his perspective. And my dad, you know, in all the ways that he is my dad and I feel shortcomings from him, I think I just realized that I shouldn't hold these hatchets. I just have to let them go. And I have to let people who are around me, kind of like this professor, be who they are and like love them and accept them and find them to be just the beautiful people they are in my life. So I think, more than burying hatchets, these days, I try not to touch hatchets and let people just be.